Morning. We're on Daf Mem Tes Amud Aleph, and today we're going to learn mostly Agadata. We're up to Rabbi Yoshua, which is the first words in the line. It's approximately, I would say, if you count from the bottom of the Amud, maybe 15 lines up. And the Gemara tells us about various Amoraim that were very interested and they were very excited about marrying a girl who came from Shevet Kahuna, you know, a daughter of Aaron HaKohen, Rabbi Yeshua Nosiv Kahanta. Rabbi Yeshua, in fact, married a Kohenes, and yet, Chalash, he became ill. Omar, he declared, Lo nichale li Aaron di edbak bizarre. Apparently, I don't meet the standards of Aaron HaKohen, and he's not happy that I married one of his offspring, one of his descendants. Dehavi lecha sona ki ana, that he should have a son-in-law like me. And perhaps this was Rabbi Yeshua's modesty. There's no definite indication that because he took ill, it was a result of the fact that he usurped Kahuna by marrying a Bas Kohen. Rav Idi Bar Ovin Nosiv Kahanta. And the opposite took place. He had great fortune as a result of the fact that he married a Bas Kohen. And Nafku Mine Tre Bni Smiche. He had two sons, both of whom became musmachim. Now keep in mind that smicha back in the day was a big deal. It meant ish mipi ish, going back to Moshe Rabbeinu. The Gemara actually names his two sons, the great sons of Rav Idi, Rav Sheshes Breder of Idi, and Rav Yeshua Breder of Idi. Now, before I raise Akasha here from the Ben Ish Chai, I want to first talk to you about the bracha at the end of the Chumash that Moshe Rabbeinu bestows upon Shevet Levi. Yoru Mishpatech Al Yaakov. Now, although this bracha was bestowed upon all of Shevet Levi, but it had a particular meaning with regard to the Kohanim of Shevet Levi. And that's based on a pasuk in Parsha Shoftim. It says, Ubasa el HaKohanim HaLeviim vel HaShofet HaShayir b'yomim ahem v'darashta v'igidu l'chas dvar mishpat. We see from this pasuk clearly that the bracha was given in a very specific way to the Kohanim. They would be the ones who would judge. They would be the Morei Hora. They would teach the nation the way of Hashem. And the Marsha here on this Agadita adds the comment that Rav Idi, by marrying a Kohenes, a Bas Kohen, his children now are from this lineage of Shevet Levi Bechlal, but more specifically from Aaron HaKohen. And as such, the blessing that Moshe Rabbeinu bestowed upon the Kohanim would be Chal in a very specific way on the descendants of Rav Idi. Even though the bracha is now going through the mother, nevertheless, that's enough to be considered Mizera Shel Aaron. On the one hand, we saw that Rabbi Yeshua felt that he wasn't up to par. He didn't deserve to marry a descendant of Aaron. But in the case of Rav Idi, his children, by the fact that he married a Kohenes, had the bracha of Moshe Rabbeinu of Yoru Mishpatech Al Yaakov. They would be Morei Hora B'Yisrael. And here we have a kasha to raise. The Ben Yoyada raises this kasha. How do we know? How does the Gemara know that these two sons that were born to Rav Idi were born b'schus Aaron HaKohen, meaning because they were descendants of Kohuna? Isn't it possible that since Rav Idi was a great Talmud Chacham, he had the merit of Torah, and in general, Talmidei Chachamim raised Talmidei Chachamim. They loved the Torah, and they passed that love on, transmitted to their children. How does the Gemara therefore know that the reason why these great sons, these Musmachim, the Morei Horah, that came from Rav Idi, was the Zchus of Kohuna? And he says the following. The Gemara apparently knew that before he married a Bas Kohen, Rav Idi was married to someone else. She was not a Bas Kohen. And the children from his first marriage were not Talmidei Chachamim. Later, after the passing of his first wife, he married a Bas Kohen. And then he had these two children, these greats, Rav Sheshes and Rav Yeshua. And the Gemara therefore attributed this to the fact that their mother was a Bas Kohen. However, what is the language here of Sheshes Brei Derav Idi, Rav Yeshua Brei Derav Idi? Wouldn't have been enough for the Gemara to just mention Rav Idi and then mention the names of his two sons, Rav Sheshes and Rav Yeshua? And perhaps the Gemara wants to emphasize the fact that these great individuals, Rav Sheshes and Rav Yeshua, were similar in status. They almost reached the greatness of their father, Rav Idi. And the emphasis here is on Brei Derav Idi. We have a principle, Beno Kari Davu Aninu, the son is an extension of his father. But he adds another point. He says that the reason why he, Rav Idi, was Zocha to these great sons, and all we know of in Shas is these two sons, he didn't have more than these two sons, is because he, Rav Idi, had two merits. He had two great zchusim. He had the zchus of Torah, which of course he passed on to the next generation. He also had the zchus of being married to Kohenes, and that was passed on to the next generation. And apparently these two merits divided up and produced these two great sons. These are the zchuyot that he had of Torah and Kohuna. The Gemara tells us about Rav Papa. Omer Rav Papa, ilo nesivna kahanta, lo yatri. Apparently Rav Papa was a wealthy person, and the Gemara had already told us, as we saw yesterday, that because the Kohanim had the mitzvah of the Ketores, that was a special school of power for Ashirus, for wealth. And Rav Papa says that the reason I was wealthy was because I married a Bas Kohen. Tosis says that Rav Papa in this Gemara is considered to have been Zochet Hashirus because he married a Bas Kohen. However, elsewhere, we seem to have indications towards the end of Masechta Pesachim that Rav Papa attributed his wealth to the fact that he was an Oseh, that he did many, many different mitzvos. And Tosfos says that we have to combine the two. Number one, he married a Bas Kohen. And number two, he acted in an outstanding way. He was a great Baal Chesed. And it was A plus B. We have to put together the two sugyas here on Daf Mem Tes, together with the sugya at the end in Kuf Yud Gimel. And the two, the combination of the two, generated his great schar of Ashirus. Again, he knew what to do with his money, and he did great, great things. Now, Rav Kahana himself, the Gemara tells us, was a Kohen, and that's the impression you get from his name, Omer Rav Kahana. And he's going to claim, Rav Kahana, that he married a Bas Kohen, and as a result, he had to go into Golus. We'll see the entire story of Rav Kahana. Well, part of it we'll see. The main story is not here, but in Kiddushin. But Tosus points out that Rav Kahana attributes his ill fortune, the fact that he had to run into Golus, he left Eretz Yisrael to go to Bavel, to the fact that he married a Bas Kohen. And the implication is that Rav Kahana was not a Kohen. We know, even in our time, we have many people have a name of Kohen, Kahana, and the like, but they are, we call them Falsha Kohen, or Katz, right? Somebody has the name Katz, which really means Kohen Tzedek, we don't necessarily conclude that he's a Kohen. And this Rav Kahana now, Gemara, is not a Kohen. The Gemara tells us in Masechta Kiddushin, on Daf Ches, that Rav Kahana received 5 Sloim b'Pidyon HaBen, indicating for sure that he was a Kohen. So Tosa says that in fact Rav Kahana was not a Kohen. In Kiddushin, he accepted Pidyon HaBen, and that is because his wife was a Kohenis. Now, for this we have to study an entire sugya of Pidyon HaBen. Can you be poder a ben by giving money to a man who's married to a Kohenis? But in any event, Tosis is still not happy with this because the Gemara in Chulin says that Rav Kahana ate from Matanos Kahuna, Matnas Kahuna, indicating again that he was a Kohen, he received Matanos. Once again, Tosis says that really the Matanos were received by his wife and she shared it with him. And this is based on a principle which Tosis formulates, that Efshar, you're allowed to give Matanos to a Kohen, and not only to a Kohen, but even to Kohenis. And if that be the case, then in Pidyon HaBen, why would we give the pigeon to the husband? Let's say he's a Kohen, why not give it to his wife if she's a Kohenis? And the answer is that the Torah says in the parasha of Pidyon HaBen, V'nasata akesef li Aaron ulebonov. Therefore, Tosis comes to the conclusion that you must give Pidyon HaBen to a Kohen Zohar, not to an Akeva. So there are matonos that you're allowed to give to a Kohenis. She can share it with her husband. But certain matanos you have to give to a Kohen Zohar. Like, for example, Pidyon HaBen, V'nasata HaKesef li'Aron u'Lebonov. If that be the case, then Tosis concludes, based on the Gemara and Kiddushin, that Rav Kahana received Pidyon HaBen, it cannot be, as we originally presented the possibility, that it was given actually to her, his wife. She was a Bas Kohen. That's impossible. The Torah requires that it be given, pidyon, to an Aaron u'Bonav. And therefore, Tosus has no choice but to assume that there were 2 Amoraim with the same name. Our Gemara is Rav Kahana, who is not a Kohen. The Gemara in Kiddushin is referring to a different Rav Kahana, who was not a Kohen. So in Kiddushin, he was a Kohen, and therefore he received the money of Pidyon HaBen. Here we're talking about Rav Kahana the second, we'll call him, who was not a Kohen. And I have here a note in which he writes that if you look carefully in the Rashba, he apparently had a slightly different girsa, a different text of Agamara. We have the words, Ilo nisivna kahanta. Had I not married an Ashes Kohen, meaning as if to say he violated, so to speak, a prohibition by marrying the daughter of a Kohen, a Kohenis, because he was not a Kohen. That's the girsa that we have. Certainly that's the girsa of Tosas. The Rashba, if you read it carefully, leaves out one word. And in his text it says, Inasivna kahanta lo glod. What is the absence of the word lo signify? Rav Kahana, in this Gemara, according to the Rashba, apparently was a Kohen, as we saw also in the Gemara in Kiddushin, he received Pidgin HaBen, but he married a Bas Yisrael. He did not marry a Kohenis. And therefore he declared that if he would marry, had he married a Bas Kohen, which he should have done, as we saw yesterday in the Gemara of Yochanan, then he would not have gone into Golus. The reason he went into Golus is because instead of marrying a Bas Kohen, he married a Bas Yisrael. And a Kohen should be married to a Bas Kohen. Again, as we said yesterday in great length, this is all back in the day when they had Kohanim Yuchasim, etc., etc. So that we now can summarize two approaches to the Gemara of Rav Kahana. He was blaming himself for bringing about the situation in which he had to go into Golus. What was he claiming he was guilty of? According to our text of the Gemara, Tosfos explains, he was not a Kohen, and he usurped his rights by marrying a Bas Kohen. Tosfos says that the Gemara in Kiddushin is referring to a different Rav Kahana, not this Rav Kahana. This one was not a Kohen. And he has the girsa lo. On the other hand, the Rashba leaves out the word lo. We can assume this is the same identical Rav Kahana who, as the Rav Kahana received Pidgin HaBen. He was in fact a Kohen, but you take out the word lo, and it means that inesivna kahanta, had I only married a Bas Kohen, then I would have merited to be spared that terrible golus that I had to go to. There's a Rashi in Masechta Yevamos who writes that Kohen calls manche motze bekal likach Bas Kohen tzarech lisa Bas Kohen. That a Kohen, if he can, should marry a Bas Kohen. Then Rashi says that Seudas Nesuin shall Kohen shenosa Bas Yisrael eina Seudas Mitzvah. So Rashi says in a case where a Kohen could not find a Bas Kohen to marry, he had to marry a Bas Yisrael, the Seuda of that marriage does not have the status of a Seudas Mitzvah. So a Seudas Mitzvah has to reach, in the case of marriage, the ideal level in which, for example, a Bas Kohen should not marry an Amah Oretz, or a Talmud Chacham should not marry off his daughter to an Amah Oretz, and a Bas Kohen should marry a Kohen should marry a Bas Kohen. In all those scenarios, Rashi says that's a real great mitzvah, that's the ideal marriage with the right yuchsin, and therefore the Suda of that marriage is a Sudas Mitzvah. Amru Le, Chazal responded to Rav Kahana, V'hola makom Torah Golisa. Why are you crying about the fact that you were forced to go into exile? In fact, you know what? You ended up in a makom Torah. So let's talk a little bit about the Golos of Rav Kahana. This is a case in which Rav Kahana was pressured by the Malchus. What was the story? Just one second. Okay, for some reason it just jumped away from me. Just give me a minute. I know I saw it here. Maybe I saw it here. Just a second. He was actually guilty of murder, but we'll see why he murdered someone. Okay, so I guess I saw it in this English translation. When I learn I got it, it's much easier for me in English. He writes the following. The Gemara at the end of Bava Kamma tells us, and again, I didn't get a chance to look up the sugya there, that Rav Kahana killed someone because he was inciting the Gentile government to misappropriate another Jew's property. That's the sugya of Moser. And Moser applies in two situations. Number one, if you give over a Jew to the authorities because he was guilty and you tattle on him and say that he was guilty of a crime. Or B, if you give over his property, let's say you say to the government that this property was really tax money and they now confiscate this money, he's also considered a Moser. Now, this happened, this story, in Bavel, under the Gentile government in Bavel. And as a result of this murder, Rav Kahana had to flee. The government was asked after him to condemn him. And he escaped to Eretz Yisrael. And this, to Rav Kahana, was considered gullus, imagining going from Bavel to Eretz Yisrael. Now, the Chassam Sofer says that why was Rav Kahana, so to speak, punished? Because he killed this Jew, and therefore he had to become a fugitive and get and be exiled to Eretz Yisrael. After all, says the Chassam Sofer, Rav Kahana was justified in killing this person. So the chiddush here of the Chassam Sofer is that the reason why Rav Kahana had to suffer this gullus, again, the Gemara is going to argue it's not such terrible gullus to go to Eretz Yisrael, it was a Makom Torah, is, Rav Kahana says, I attribute it not to the fact that I killed a Moser, that was justified, but rather I had no right to marry a Bas Kohen. And again, let's assume, like Tosis, that this Rav Kahana was not a Kohen. And it means that Aaron HaKohen, right, the great-great-great-great-grandfather of this wife of Rav Kahana, was not satisfied with the fact that one of his descendants was married out of the clan to a non-Kohen, even though his name was Kahana, but he wasn't a Kohen. Now, why was Aaron dissatisfied? And you and I could have said, if not for the Chassam Sofer, because this fellow, this Rabbi Kahana, had killed a Moser, and Aaron was very unhappy about that. The Chassam Sofer says no. The very fact that Rav Kahana attributes his gullus to the fact that he married a Bas Kohen and he had no right to do so, and the Gemara uses this as a proof for what we saw in the previous sugya, that a Bas Kohen should be married off to a Kohen, and he, Rav Kahana, violated that halacha. It means that it wasn't because of the fact that he had murdered a Moser. That's not why Aaron was dissatisfied, but rather because he, Rav Kahana, had no right to marry a Bas Kohen. Now, in my humble opinion, there's another possibility in understanding this Gemara, and we don't have to go with the approach of the Chassam Sofer. It could be that in the case of Kahuna, there's a special standard in which even in the case of a person who was justified and he was not guilty as a murderer, but if he was the, shall we say, the tool in the hands of divine providence to bring about the death of another Jew, then in kahuna terms, he is to be excluded. And this touches on a fantastic and fundamental machlokas regarding Birchas Kohen. In the case of a Kohen who is guilty of an unintentional, inadvertent murder, the Torah says, and we derive from Sukkim and Tanakh, that if a Kohen has blood on his hands, Jewish blood on his hands, he cannot duch it. What about a case of a Kohen who inadvertently killed someone? He killed someone b'shogeg. It's true that he has Jewish blood on his hands, but there's no element of mazit. And many Rishonim will say that such a Kohen should not duch it. We had such a case, actually, in where I was a Rebbe. My first job was in Malé Adumim, of a Kohen who, during a training accident, in a tank, in those days the Hesder boys were in tanks, and he unintentionally killed another soldier in the group. Terrible, terrible tragedy. I mean, he carries the guilt to this day. At the time of the Ir Miklat, he probably would have been a classic shogeg, and he would have gone to the Ir Miklat. But the issue was whether or not he could duchen. And you know, we try to bend over backwards to find a heter that he could duchen. That even according to those poskim who say that a rotzeach b'shogeg is possible to duchen, but not in the case of a soldier. A soldier has different din. He's involved not just in falling off a high ladder, he's involved in a mitzvah. In any event, I don't remember all the details. I'm going back literally 40 years. And it could be that in kahuna, the standards are higher. And if HaKadosh Baruch Hu set you up that you would have to be the one to put this person to death, you still, as far as kahuna is concerned, are excluded. But in any event, the Gemara seems to assume that Rav Kahana's declaration was that he suffered this golus, Nebuch to Eretz Yisrael, because he had married a bas kohen. So the Gemara immediately asks, well, halamakam Torah golisa, you can't tell me that this is a punishment, the fact that you had to end up in Eretz Yisrael. You were in a citadel of Torah. Lo gilai digole inshi. In other words, this is not... Now Rav Khan is responding, this is not the normal way that people go on aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. You know, there are many different reasons why people make aliyah. He says that if it was my will to leave Bavel, and it was my decision because Eretz Yisrael was a makom Torah, that's one thing. Then you could certainly say that this is Adarab, this is a great schus that I got to make aliyah to Eretz Yisrael. But in this particular case, in the circumstances of my, so to speak, aliyah to Eretz Yisrael, I was forced to go, I was compelled to go, because the government was after me, and I was a fugitive. I had to save myself from going to Eretz Yisrael. It was not my choice decision. I would have been more happy to stay in Bavel. That's where I was flourishing. That was my home. And that's where I was transmitting the Torah. So therefore, if I came to Aliyah to Eretz Yisrael because of Sakonis Nefashos, because of the fear of the government, that was a punishment. Now, there's another element in the equation here based on the Gemara in Bava Kamma. The Gemara discusses, as I said before, the case of a Moser, of one Jew who Nebuch is Moser to the Malchus, the Mammon, of his friend, of his fellow Jew. And the Gemara says that they took this Moser in front of Rav. Rav told him that you're not allowed to be Moser. This person was Meiz Panov Keneged Rav. And he said, despite the fact that Rav had commanded him that he should not be a Moser, he went ahead and he did so. Who was present at the time of this chutzpah in front of Rav? It was none other than this Rav Kahana. When he saw it, he got up and he killed this person. And then as a result, he had to run away as a fugitive to Eretz Yisrael because of the Malchus, the Emas Malchus. And once again, I think this may shed another light on this sugya, and we could possibly attribute the gullus of Rav Kahana to another factor. We've seen already in the past that sometimes we add together A plus B. It's not just, as Rav Kahana seems to approach it, formulated in our Gemara, that because he married a Kahana, a Bas Kohen, and he had no right to do so, that's why he suffered this gullus. Again, gullus in inverted commas. But there's another element, perhaps, in the equation. Rav was there. Rav didn't tell Rav Kahana to kill this person. Obviously, Rav Kahana couldn't tolerate the chutzpah of this person who got a direct mandate from Rav that he's not allowed to be Moser. And this man gets up in front of Rav and he says, no, I'm going to be Moser, I don't care what you say. And there's no doubt that chutzpah of this sort deserves a tremendous punishment. He should be tarred and feathered, but that Rav Kahana got up and he killed the man, that maybe was too extreme. I'm not going to say that he was a Kahanist, that I won't say, because I was a big fan of Rabbi Kahana, but it was an extreme kind of an action that this Rav Kahana took. So that might also kick in. What I mean to say is as follows. When a person is punished, the punishment is a result of a certain action. That's LP, just looking at it from an external position. We are obligated sometimes when we suffer to look deeply behind the surface and see if there's a root, avera, some sort of violation. But although Rav Kahana may have carried this guilt because he felt that maybe Aaron wasn't happy with the fact that he, Rav Kahana, who was not a Kohen, married a Bas Kohen, but nevertheless the immediate suffering, again in inverted commas, of having to run to Eretz Yisrael was a result of the fact that he killed a Jew. And both might be true. In terms of a punishment, it could be that the punishment is an immediate result of an action that wasn't meant to be taken. And on top, we look for deeper violations. And we combine the two. Now the next sugya that we're going to learn, which is part of this Haggadah, is very difficult for me. Again, I'm going to try to do the best I can, and you'll help me. There are two categories of su'uda, as we've seen. There's a su'das mitzvah, and there's a su'das reshus. We understand, in the case of a Talmud Chacham, he's on a high standard, we have greater demands and expectations, his time is very precious, that in a case of a su'das mitzvah, we say Gadol Torah Shemei V'Lidei Maisa, he has to take a break from his Torah studies to participate and contribute to the atmosphere of the su'das mitzvah. Su'das Rishus, maybe that's not a luxury that a Talmud Chacham could afford indulging in. as we said before, his time is very precious. But in the next sugya that we're going to learn, it seems that the punishment in a case of a Talmud Chacham who participates in a Sudas Rishus is way, way beyond at least my comprehension. Very severe. And I can only tell you the famous Gemara in Chagiga that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is medagdek with the tzaddikim kuchot ha-saira. I don't know. But there are a number of different dimensions to this sugya. One is, as I said, bittul Torah. Why are you taking time away from your learning to be involved in su'udas rishus? There's no push, or there's no compelling reason for you to break away from your learning. But perhaps there's another element to this sugya. And that has to do with a kind of, I'm going to use the term, gluttony. How often does this Talmud Chacham that we're going to talk about take a break and enjoy the benefits of a Sudas Rishus? Does it happen once in a year? Or does this become part of his regular routine? Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, kol anena misudas rishus lesof gola. We're talking about a very severe punishment when a person is uprooted from his home and he goes into exile. And for what terrible violation? He participates in a Sudas Rishus. Rabbi Yitzchak quotes a pasuk in Amos, Shenemar, V'ochlim korim mitzon v'agolim mitoch marbek, which means they eat kvasim in atzon, and they eat agalim, I guess calves, mimakom kinusam, from a place where they are gathered together, and uksiv, and the pasuk a little bit further on in the same chapter says lachem aton now yiglu barosh golim. They are going to be at the head of the pack of Jews that go into exile. And who's the they referring to? There's nothing in the Navi that indicates that there was any avera that was mentioned other than the fact that they eat from the kvasim and the agolim. So where is the avera that these should be the first to go into exile? Now, the pasuk itself is discussing the Aseres HaShvatim, and Amos says that they overextended themselves with ribui tainug, and they were involved in a certain kind of life of taiva. They looked for pleasure-seeking, and therefore they deserve to be at the head of this gullus. Yehuda, for example, was not sent into Golus. And these Jews would be sent into Golus because of their gluttony. To me, again, not that I'm telling you that I understand why there's such a severe punishment. These are singled out because of their enjoyment of the pleasures of eating and so forth. But at least it puts the next sugya about the punishment to a Talmud Chacham into perhaps a broader perspective. We're not just talking about Bittul Torah, the fact that this Talmud Chacham goes out with his chums, his friends, to shoot the breeze. You know, they go out for a dinner from time to time. But maybe we're talking about a much more extreme behavior phenomenon. Tana Rabbana. Kol Talmud Chacham amar besudaso b'chol makom. Let's emphasize the extra two words, b'chol makom. Now, the Rambam, in Perikei Milchus Deos, interprets b'chol makom, meaning that even if he goes out with other Talmidei Chachamim, and that perhaps puts a different spin on it, the Rambam may be pushing us more towards the direction of Bittul Torah. There's nothing wrong with the company that he is rubbing shoulders with, according to the Rambam. But perhaps we could suggest that b'chol makom means on every occasion. Every occasion is not referring to going out with people and spending time with them who are on a lower level than him. They're amei ha'aretz and so on. But b'chol makom might be on a regular basis. And it's really interesting that we're talking about a Talmud Chacham, and yet he enjoys food. Now again, I have nothing against the Talmud Chacham who enjoys food. You know, give him a good steak. You know, take him to, I don't know if anyone is old enough to remember a cow on the roof, you know. So a Talmud Chacham also goes out to a fancy restaurant. Vasigifarlach. But I think we're talking about a strange phenomenon. On the one hand, he has a love for Torah. He's a Talmud Chacham. He has spent, you know, days and nights in the Beis Medrash. He's accomplished a great deal in Torah. And yet at the same time, he still remains a Baal Taiva. You know, send him to a burger bar and he's the first one to go. And the punishment for this, according to the Braisa, is very severe. Machrivis Beso, which probably means that he spends a great deal of his money, of his possessions, in order to enjoy and indulge in the pleasures that he enjoys. And so his family is left without much money. He eats up all his money. You know, he goes out every night, you know, to enjoy a fancy restaurant, a good meat meal. Ma'alman is ishto, which means that if he's going to go into Golus, he's far away from his wife. And the reason why he's going far away is because he's looking for new pleasures. Again, it's very hard to believe that this is a Talmud Chacham. Miyasem es gozolov. Gozolov is a catchphrase for his children. They're like his fledglings. And they are like orphans during his lifetime. He's not around. He's always out there, you know, going to a different restaurant. V'talmudo mishtakech mimenu. Ultimately, all the Torah knowledge that he amassed will be forgotten. He is so dedicated to pursue his pleasures that he forgets it. He forgets his Torah. Now, there's an additional comment here of the Ein Yaakov. He writes that the reason why he forgets his Talmud is, as the Gemara is going to say later on, shekoronoso bar mach revoy, which means he gets to the point where he starts drinking. You know, you go to a good restaurant and they offer you a bottle of wine and he starts drinking. And then he doesn't go home to sleep. Ela mekaplin es habgadim yishenim aleihem. And the Gemara is going to tell us in a different Masechta, Masechta Horios, that if you sleep out of your house, they used to, you know, these drunkards would take their begadim and they would make like a little bit of a sheet and a pillow and they would go to sleep publicly. They're like homeless. Those people forget any Torah that they accomplished. Umachlokos rabos boim olav, boos olav. And once he starts forgetting his Torah, he starts fighting with people. And he says, "Merivos im chenvonim shalokech mehem mezonos ba'akofa b'shvil sudosav." When he runs out of funds, he buys food on credit. I mean, it sounds like the Parsha Ben Sora Morah to me. And he gets into fights with the sellers because after a while they say, "My friend, genug, you know, pay up." Dvarav einim nishmoim. Ultimately, people are not going to listen to what he has to say. And he's a Mechal Shem Shamayim V'Shem Rabo V'Shem Oviv. Again, Rabosa, I'm going to insist that we're not describing a Talmud Chacham who goes out to eat once a month, you know, and then he enjoys the pleasure and the company of his buddies. We're talking about someone who is absolutely addicted and he's a pleasure seeker. And people say about him, look how disgusting he is. This is a person who studied Torah, his behavior patterns are repulsive. Oilo li aviv shalimdo Torah. They start saying, Oh, how terrible, woe it is to his father who taught him Torah. There are many Mishnayos in Avos that reflect this idea. The Gorem Shem Ra Lo Ulubanov Ulubnei Beso. He ruins the reputation of his children, of his grandchildren, Ad Sof Kol Adoros. In other words, Dafka, because he's a Talmud Chacham, and he has this great Milo, his misbehavior is public. It becomes public knowledge. Everyone's talking about it. No one's forgetting about it. Now, what is this shame ra, this bad reputation, that's not going to be forgotten, that's going to be passed on for generations, Mayhi? Omar Abaye, Korule, the name that they give to his offspring, is Bar Mechim Tanure. Interesting. The son of someone who heats up ovens. In other words, he always wants to have a fresh piece of bread, and therefore his oven is always hot. And he's basically gluttonous. And it's humiliating. And even his son will get that reputation. They describe the father, this Talmud Chacham, as Bar Mechim Tanura. He is the one who heats up the oven. And the son is going to carry that reputation of being the son of this person. Now, I have a note here in which he says that Bar Mechim Tanure means that he's the son of someone who, as we said before, heats up the oven. But the Marsha writes that Karile, you'll see that the Gemara says Karule, means Shekorim Lo Atzmokach. And therefore he says the following, that what the Gemara wants to say is that he brings about his own reputation, his bad reputation. Gorem Sheirali Atzma. And he is a Mechamem Tanurim. And a Talmud Chacham is usually called a Bar Orion, right? The son of Torah, which is called Or. Here he's called the son of a hot oven. But then the question arises, if we're talking about Kari Le means to he himself, the father, how does that answer the Gemara's question about the Gorem Shem Ra Lo Ulubanov? Now, we quoted before the Pasuk, you eat the fattened sheep of the flock, the calves from inside the stall, and therefore will you now be exiled at the head of the exiles? And we said that a Talmud Chacham who feasts excessively in any place, and he wants to maintain this habit, and therefore to increase his income. Ah, different shot. We said to expose himself to new pleasures, he travels extensively. He abandons his wife and his children. He, in effect, renders his wife a widow and his children orphans. The same could befall anyone who indulges in any expensive habit. The Gemara specifies a Torah scholar because he typically does not have a substantial income. He will not resort to stealing, therefore is more likely to travel to get access to the funds that he needs or the food that he wants to eat. He doesn't occupy himself with reviewing his studies. He's too busy trying to get more money to support his addiction. He's mamish like a drug addict. And as a result of forgetting his studies, he renders false decisions. He has many disputants, or he strife against those shopkeepers who gave him credit, extended credit to him. And due to his voracious appetite, his oven is constantly being heated to feed him. And now we're going to talk about his drunkenness. Rava Omar, what kind of reputation does this person have? Bar Meraked Bei Kuve. He dances around the stores like clowns who dance in and out of stores. And why? Because he's drunk. Rav Papa Omar Bar Melachech Pinche. He's the son of someone who licks his bowl. In other words, he has such a taiva to eat that he licks the bowl. Rav Shmaya Omar Bar Moch Rava. He folds up his clothing and he sleeps out in the streets on top of his clothing like a drunkard. He doesn't have enough of soberness to go home and sleep on a bed. And that's the end of this Agadita about Talmidei Chachamim who are so gluttonous, they just can't control their appetite. Okay. Now the Gemara is going to discuss the significance of marrying a Bas Talmud Chacham, and the flip side is the negative of marrying off one's daughter to an Amoritz. And the Gemara is going to say that a person should basically sell the shirt off his back in order to marry his daughter off to a Talmud Chacham. And then the significance of marrying a Bas Talmud Chacham. And many times I thought about this idea of marrying a Bas Talmud Chacham. And in Lomdish terms, I would ask the following question. Is it a din in the Shver or is it a din in the Bas? What is significant about, as we'll see in this Gemara, that a person should sell the shirt off his back to marry a Bas Talmud Chacham? Is it because of his relationship with the father-in-law? Or is it because of the daughter herself? Because she was raised by her father who's a Talmud Chacham. And I'm assuming her father's not gluttonous. Tana Rabbana, Li'olam Yimkar Adam Kol Ma She'yeshlo V'yisa Bas Talmud Chacham. He should sell whatever he has in order to marry a daughter of a Talmud Chacham. Meaning, he's not going to get too much gashmius. He won't get a fat dowry from his father-in-law. His father-in-law is a Talmud Chacham. He's a Rosh Shiva, he's a Malamed, he's a Mora Hora, but he's not raking in a great income. Although Baruch Hashem today, Dayanim actually get paid pretty well. So that he's not going to get much money from his father-in-law. He's going to have to eke out a living in order to support a family. But it's worth it. Why? Because he's marrying a Bas Talmud Chacham. So what is the significance of marrying a Bas Talmud Chacham? As I said, is it a din in her or in the connection through her to his father-in-law? So take a look at the Gemara, the Braisa. It says, She'im meis ogola muftachlo shebonav talmidei chacham. I suspect that the Gemara is letting the cat out of the bag over here, revealing the secret. It's a din in the bas. If he dies, and he leaves her as a widow raising the children by herself, she will be able to impart to the children the love for Torah. And why? You could have said, well, that's because she married a Talmud Chacham. But the Gemara is saying, Yimkar Adam is Kol Mashiyesha V'Yisa Bas Talmud Chacham. It doesn't say that we're addressing a Talmud Chacham. The Gemara seems to indicate that every Jew should try to marry a Bas Talmud Chacham. Why? Because she will transmit the Torah to her sons. They will become Talmidei Chacham. She appreciates the fact that she's a Bas Talmud Chacham. Now, if you ask me, do I want to be cynical about this? Is this really true that a Bas Talmud Chacham appreciates Torah? She admires her father? I don't know. But in an ideal world, that's the way it should work. She had a great example in her father. She saw how much dedication and love he had for Torah. She will transmit that to the children, even in the absence of a husband, if he passes on. It's interesting that the Gemara mentions two possibilities. Either he died or he went into Golus. Golus could mean many different things. He's not around to raise his children. Why? Because he's, you know, he's a Zvulin, Al Chof Yamim Yishkon, or like Rav Kahana's story, he had to run away from the Malchus. Whatever the case may be, the children need a living example within the family to the love for Torah, and they will get it from their mother, because she is a Bas Talmud Chacham. She has absorbed that love for Torah from her father's home. The Aliyisa Bas Ama Oretz, she meso gola bonav Ami Haaretz. If she did not see that living example in her father of love for Torah, her father was whatever he was, but he was not in any way dedicated to the Torah study. In fact, as we said yesterday, an Am Haaretz at the time of the Gemara was not an Am Haaretz of today. You know, an Am Haaretz of those times was someone who was not careful and meticulous about mitzvahs. It wasn't just that he was a boor, he was ignorant. Today you could talk about an Am Haaretz because he didn't have the upbringing. You know, they didn't send him to a yeshiva when he was a youngster, maybe he had to go to public school. But that doesn't mean he's an Am Haaretz, the way the Gemara calls it. A real Am Haaretz. The word Am Haaretz can mean so many different things. It's relative. Here, we're talking about a Bas Am Haaretz. She has not seen in her upbringing an example of Torah in the broader sense. And therefore, the children, if she's going to be responsible to raise them, will not be anything more than Am Haaretz. And it's almost as if a man who marries a Bas Am Haaretz, knowing that she doesn't have it within her to raise the children as Talmidei Chacham with a love for Torah, he's almost, by virtue of the fact that he married this woman, has already stated, not in so many words, but by implication, that he doesn't mind if his children will be Am Haaretz. But again, all this is meant to impress upon us that the background in which a child is raised has such a powerful influence on the child. Tana Rabbanan, and with this we'll conclude. Li'olam yimkar adam kol ma sheyesh lo v'yisa bas tamid chacham. And now the Brisa adds the following. V'yasi bito l'tamid chacham. Why is it so important that he marry off his daughter to a tamid chacham? And the answer is that now it's going to be in ve'agefen. Moshal hu, in ve'agefen, shudover na umiskabel. Now, it's a combination of two great strains, of a Talmud Chacham, a Bas Talmud Chacham, when they come together in marriage, it's in ve'agefen. The gefen is always symbolic of not only physical beauty, the vines are gorgeous, they're beautiful, but also Yayin is Torah, Ein Yayin Ela Torah. And we'll conclude with a pasuk in Tehillim. Eshtecha kegeven poria. This is quoted by the Marsha here. And Dover Noah umiskabel means that the marriage to a Bas Talmud Chacham is a Dover Noah. And miskabel, Hainu sheyelo mimena zera kosher. That from the marriage to Bas Talmud Chacham, not only is it in and of itself a Dover Noah, but it's also miskabel, and it will have an impact on the generations to come. But for lo yisa bito la Am Haaretz, he should not marry off his daughter to an Am Haaretz. And what's the mashal for that? Mashal is ze in ve'agefen be in ve'asne. It's a dover kiur. When you mix a vine with in ve'asne, I'll give you the, he gives the English translation here. a thorny bush. And that's unseemly, he says. The Eino Miskabel, the last two words on the top of Memtesam and Beis, it's unacceptable. Just adding a note from the Ben Ish Chai here, in terms of the mashal, he says when they make wine out of grapes, there are grapes which produce very beautiful red wine. There are other grapes that produce white wine. Now, if you mix the two together, red wine and white wine, which today is not considered a good idea, but the Ben Yoyada says that ma'arven osam v'yachad v'yotze mari yofe, it gives you a very fine color when you mix the red wine with the white wine, and also a very beautiful taste. Yesh anavim, he says, the wine is too sweet. Have you ever complained that the wine is too sweet? Sometimes the wine is too dry. So we can get both the right color, if the combination is correct, and the right taste. That's how he explains the double language of na umiskabel. Aval in veyasne motzien tam chamutz. The wine that comes from the grapes of the snare. And we said that it's a thorn bush, okay? It's hard for me to understand where the wine, how the grapes are growing on this thorn bush. In any event, he says that this wine is very sour. It's very tart. She'im arvin osom yayin, by adding it to wine, to healthy wine, hu mekalkel es tama. And not only that, vi esmar'i. So this is the mashal of Dovar Noa Umiskabel, or the opposite, Dovar Kior, the Eino Miskabel. And the Gemara here on the top of Daf Mem Tesam and Beis is a continue in the same vein, bringing a brisa. What happens if a person cannot marry off his daughter to a Talmud Chacham? What are the other alternatives? What are the other possibilities? So this is where we're going to stop for today. As I said before, on the top of Daf Memtes Amid Beis.